What happens when you really, really, really love someone? They're the closest and the most precious thing to you. But sometimes they really do your head in. The people who are closest to you are ready to sabotage you, to steer you off course. And then you suddenly look around you at the carnage and the wrappers and the recycle bin. And you think, how did I get here? I was doing so well when I was in group last week. Well, that's what we're here to talk about today. How to put a plan in place when the people who are around you... I was trying to think of alliteration then, but it didn't work. The people who are precipitating around you, proceeding around you... Nope. I'm just going to shut up and just play some ukuleles. So whilst I put my teeth back in and learn to utilise the English language fully and carefully and grammatically, we welcome you to this The Slimming World podcast. Anna, please rescue me and say something far more professional and lovely.
You won't regret the time you spend with us today. I thought it was quite profound.
Is a declaration to open a podcast right now.
Do you know what? I promise you it won't be a wasted however many minutes we record for. You will get something out of this that will make your day better. Now, it may be that is just laughing at the pure ridiculousness that pours out of my gob. It may be it's some pearls of wisdom that we pass on to you. It may be that you just realise when you listen to us that your life is actually better than you thought it was. But whatever it is, you won't regret listening.
That sounds like exercise. You never regret exercising, but you don't want to do it in the first place. But maybe people do want to listen to us in the first place.
Well, I hope they do, because if anybody is being like forced to listen to us as a form of like water torture, then that would concern me a little bit. But you know, sometimes when you think, well, what am I going to get out of this? Sometimes really important to think, I'm going to get something. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be, but at the end of it, think what you got out.
A sense of intrigue there as we... Yeah, talk about love, because we like to point out one of our favourite days in the calendar happens to be coming up, Valentine's Day. And what's really nice to know is whether you're single or you're coupled up, probably nobody is going out for dinner, because the restaurants and you might go for a takeaway coffee with your loved one. That's about as exciting and romantic as it can get. Do you know, earlier this week, it was so cold here, I went for a walk with a friend. We went and grabbed a takeaway coffee because it was really cold. Like, I was actually walking and I enjoy her company, but I was genuinely thinking,
when's this going to end?
I need this to be over. This is cold and this is not enjoyable right now. My face hurts, my hands hurt, my thighs hurt because they were cold. Oof. And then I just couldn't warm up with this coffee. So we went and stood in the corner of a low-cost supermarket just to warm up for 5 minutes. We didn't go to buy anything. We just needed to be indoors for a few moments.
You actually went in just to shelter? Yeah. It's a socially distanced, yeah.
Of course, it was all legal, but, you know, that's what we're dealing with.
How different our lives are. How different.
Very different, yes. So this is Slimming World Podcast. I'm Claire, she's Anna. We are officially sponsored by Slimming World. Both of us follow the plan. Anna is a consultant, I'm a member. And we are like a group between group, really. So we encourage you, you know, there's this tagline which is going around Slimming World at the moment, which is don't put your dreams on hold. Like, a lot of people are saying, oh, I'll join up to group when I've got something to work towards. When we come out of lockdown, it's winter, it's cold and rainy. I'll get to it eventually. But actually, like, you don't want to kind of like leave it till later. Like, take your life by both reins and start steering your course now, I guess.
Yeah, because you know what I think, right? Of course, I meet a lot of people who are absolutely embracing it, doing it. I meet a lot of people who've parked it for a little bit, is that when this is over, and hopefully it's going to be over, like, as in we'll be in more freer time soon, you don't want to then think, oh my gosh, now I've got 3 stone to lose and I want to enjoy the sunshine, or I want to go on holiday. Like, if we can help you now, when we are free, we're going to have even more fun. That's what I think. But I know it's tough. And I remember, I think these times are about being kind to yourself as well. And I was talking to someone the other day about not setting ridiculous goals, like setting, well, actually today, my plan is just to drink 8 glasses of water. My plan is not to go and eat the entire contents of the chocolate aisle at my local supermarket. Setting those plans in place. So I think people think they've got to go 100 miles an hour, least four stone in 10 minutes, or it's not worth doing.
See, this subject that we have picked to talk about today, my goodness, I've been thinking about this a lot.
Oh, have you?
Because like for many years, I did the plan on my own. I cooked on my own. I lived on my own. But now I live with somebody, and also previously, you know, I've lived with family, and it's, there's always an excuse, isn't there? Like, that's what I kind of think. And I realised this week I was cross. I got cross at Matt, my fella who I live with here, and I got cross at him because he was, I can't remember what it was, he was eating something in front of me that looks absolutely delicious. Or I jokingly said, "Oh, go and get the Biscoff, get the Biscoff spread with a spoon and bring it to me." And he did, but it was to enable him to go and eat his sweet stuff. And I got cross, and then I kind of thought to myself, "No, come on, take responsibility. You control what goes in your mouth, not him. Like, you're the one who plans the food. You're the one who gives him when he says, oh, should we have some chocolate? You're the one who instigates it a lot of the time. So take responsibility that you need to stop blaming other people for the fact that, you know, I come to this podcast and I bloody put £2 on, because that's my fault. It's my responsibility. So I was thinking about this from lots of different perspectives, but my perspective is I realise upon reflection of this subject, I need to take better responsibility and own up to my mistakes, which we'll hear lots of different points of view, but that's where I come at it. What did you think when you saw this as a subject?
A few things. It made me realise how blessed I am in the respect of Phil and I are on a very similar weight loss situation, and he's ultimately one of the most supportive people in my life about it. However, when the ship is sinking, he will help me make it sink. But it also brought a lot of things to me about the people I encounter and how I know I'm truly blessed with the support system I've got around me in terms of my weight maintenance and my weight loss. But I meet people who are not only battling against what they feel internally, but then going against people who are trying to sabotage them intentionally, who come out at maybe a more subconscious, you know, lower down almost attack. People who get a barrage of abuse, you know, it's made me realise actually how so many people have got it from all angles. We need a strategy, all of us, for when these things happen. You know, I come from, as I've talked about a lot, a big Jewish family. My grandma used to give me cake because she was telling me I was fat and you need to lose weight, but don't offend me by not eating my food. And I became very strong at batting that off, but I've got a strong personality. And if you haven't, how much that can really, really affect you. So I think it's something that maybe we don't talk about enough, about how as part of a weight loss journey, there are a lot of people that can really sabotage you. And how to deal with it? What are the tools? What are the techniques? What are the things you can say? What is your strategy? But also paying attention to it, because if you wait until the event, you're not going to be prepped. So having, like, you know how you'd have a strategy for if you felt like you were going to pick at night or what to do on a hangover, you always need to think about if you're being sabotaged by other people, that you've got a kind of armoury for it.
Yeah. What do they call it? In some of the books that you get in group, like the...
Visualisation?
No, it's the trigger, the danger zone, something. There's 3 points. Oh.
So when you're... Hold on.
It's the blue-green book. Everyone's like, I know what you mean. You're all shouting at me. It's this. It's page this on this book. I know there will be geeky. Hang on, show me the book. Be delighted. Yep, there was also one that was more recent to that, which
this one.
The lockdown.
Yeah, let me get. Oh, hold on, love. I'm just wrecking the office. Hold on.
Anna's bending over. Back Together, This Is Your Time was a book that we got in group. In fact, consultants probably have a truckload still. So if you're a member and you want another one of those, ask your consultant. This hat made you go through every week about your triggers.
So we looked at it. So looking at the kind of triggers, your danger zones, your less conscious sabotage trapped, what you're going to do to make a promise to yourself, but really looking at kind of what the danger is, what your subconscious ones are, and then a plan for it. And then visualization comes into that by working through what will happen when the situation really arises. So when you get to it, it's not like a shock. I had it when Phil and I first started going out together, which is 20 years next week. How weird is that? He would come with, the fresher bars, the chewy bars. And Phil wouldn't turn up with one. He'd turn up with like 12. And I'd just have to rehearse. One, please, Phil. One, please, Phil. One, please, Phil. Because I knew if I didn't, I'd be like, eat all 12, Anna. Eat all 12. So, yeah. Hopefully today we can share our pearls of wisdom and how we get through it or what we've learned. Because I've learned quite a few techniques over the years. I find like headbutting the wall really helps. No, I'm joking. But yeah. knowing how it makes you feel as well.
There was a great article when I was looking through. Sometimes I just type in key phrases when I'm having a cup of tea and I go into Lifeline Online, the member site, and I type in there key phrases. I typed in, how to get support from family and friends. And there was an article ironically titled "How to Get Support from Your Family and Friends." I was like, hey, we're on track here, people. But it included tips about mum-proof your weight loss, when your mum tries to feed you up, friend-proof your weight loss when you're out at the pub or the restaurant and they're like, come on, have another pint. Child-proof your weight loss when you eat together, plan ahead for snacks so you're not eating all the toddler's extra bits of food. Partner-proof your weight loss, let them know what's important to you and reassuring them that you're not going to become like a completely different person if you go and lose the weight. But I think what was more telling was the messages that we got from a couple of listeners who were saying, yeah, I'm really struggling with this. Like Rowan, the message we got from Rowan really just was very direct and hit home about this topic. Mm. How do you keep motivated when other people around you have given up? I live with my parents who were on plan long before I started. I joined and it was great because we all supported each other, but now they have given up. I have now lost over 8 stone with 2 left to lose. I mean, pause that there. That's flipping awesome. The house, though, is now full of junk food and they are constantly offering me stuff. I have resisted so far, but it is so much harder now and I don't want to go back. You know, like I picture Rowan kind of sat there with a hand on the chairs, like the knuckles going white, like, must not resist. And I heard this phrase of the week, which I think that you might love. It's willpower, not willpower.
Ooh.
Right? Rather than having willpower, like, I will not eat this chocolate. I will not eat this chocolate. I will be good. I will be good. Having willpower and like, it's like, it comes back to this power to choose. Like, yeah. Actually, I have the power to choose to be well and to look after myself and to make healthy choices for my well-being. So like, I thought, ooh, that's making me think.
You know, I think a really important point that we all have to address in our weight loss journeys is when we are faced with our temptation, it is our nemesis, it's our temptation. And the thought, the power, the want, it just screams at you, doesn't it? It attacks you from every angle. It's so loud. So to withstand it is such a hard thing to do. It takes practice. It takes practice. It takes the saying no and then, you know, celebrating the fact that you chose not to. It also takes the kind of, I'm choosing to do this because I want the end result. It also is about saying, actually, what's going on for them that they're doing this? And the thing that I found, and I suspect you found, Claire, is sometimes when you've lost weight, to the people around you, you are the face of their failure in their minds. I'm not saying their failure, but...
So true.
Yeah, you are showing everything they wish they could achieve. And their way, and it may be very subconscious, is to inadvertently sabotage you, because actually it makes them feel better if they see you having lost 8 stone, hitting the chocolate biscuits and the crisps. Somehow that's okay for them to eat the crisps and the chocolate, or they make you feel bad about the fact that you've done it. And you know, I remember getting comments about, you've lost weight and you've changed. No, I actually now have the courage to say the things that I possibly didn't say 4 stone ago. It's not that I've changed, I've just got a voice. So I think what we have to understand when we lose weight in often in relationships is the dynamic changes, the position of who we are as people in those relationships change. And we almost have to resettle where we're at. And I suspect for Aran's family, they just don't know where they're at with themselves. And so it's almost rolling onto you. Whereas what you're doing by saying no is saying, actually, I'm taking control of my dreams and where you're at isn't going to impact me. So I don't know what you'd say, Claire, but I would say it's keeping practicing what you're doing and knowing that, yeah, you may have a bar of chocolate, you may have a packet of crisps, but you're never going to go back there because you've made long-term habit changes that will be deeply ingrained now.
Yeah. See, like Christina dropped us a message and it said, "Hello, ladies. I love your podcast and have been an avid listener since day one. You've helped me lose 4 stone to reach my target and I've kept it off for a whole year. Congratulations."
Diamond.
A question that's been going around in my head for months is this. What to say to people when they inevitably say things like, "Oh yeah, I tried Slimming World, but it didn't work for me," or "Don't lose any more, will you?" and other such negative stuff. I know these statements are more about them and how they feel about themselves. I often keep my reply vague, as I don't want to sound like a know-it-all or make them feel bad. There's probably no right or wrong way to handle these conversations, but I'd love to know your thoughts. And I think what you're saying, Anna, about almost like this mirror that people kind of think, "Oh, I can't do that," or they. I also think when you lose a lot of weight and you're talking about like how you do change, and I think what you're saying about you find a voice, like you always had that voice, but you never exercised
it. Yeah,
and I definitely my friends have changed. I look at the people who I have spent a lot more time with in lockdown, the people who I'm still keeping in touch with. They are slightly different to who I hung out with 3 or 4 years ago, because in some ways we were all kind of enabling each other really to continue these bad habits. And when I stepped out of the script, it was like, "Oh, what are you doing? No, that can't happen." Like when I told, you know, one particular friend that I wasn't drinking, she was like, "Oh, what a bore. I don't want to go out with you. Why are we out together? What's the point of us even going to a pub? How boring are you?" And I was like, "Well, you're getting phased out. See ya."
Yeah.
But I remember listening to another podcast, and I forget which one, or it was a YouTube video or something, and it described it as something like the hero's journey. I don't like that phrase. It makes me cringe inside me.
I've never heard it before.
But the hero's journey talks about when you are on a mission to get somewhere, like be it like a target weight, the middle bit can often be quite lonely because you're not really sure about these new clothes that you're wearing and this new person, this new outlook you have. And I think then when other people kind of question it becomes quite muddled, but you're also in a sense proud that you are changing and you're getting to this place, but you're not yet there. And the middle part of the hero's journey being quite lonely because you don't fit with who you used to be, but you don't know who you are yet.
Yeah. It's like being a teenager all over again.
And so when you're uncertain of that inside of you, when someone else comes along and says something negative or tries to sabotage you, it's easy to kind of just fall or not fail, but like slip into that old familiar habit. Yeah. And I think about that and about the external, well, what's going on for them, but also what's really going on with you. And sometimes you're kind of just so in the, "I go to group every week, I weigh in every week, I'm planning my food, I'm doing my food diary," that, and then the weight's slowly kind of coming off, or quickly, however you're choosing to do it. And you don't kind of have that realization. I don't think I had that realization until maybe about 3 or 4 months into this journey, where I was like, I've heard about this. That's putting kind of not a label, but it's putting words to what I was actually feeling without me even realizing. Because this is where I think it's easy when you kind of got so far and you progress and then you find yourself almost sabotaging yourself because you like don't realize that. Like, I have elements of that I'm feeling at the moment. And I had a conversation with Matt about it once I kind of did the whole, "Come on, Claire, take responsibility. Stop trying to blame Matt for like you eating far much more Biscoff than you actually really physically needed." I kind of started to think, you know, being engaged, thinking about the prospect of getting married, actually,
it's terrifying.
Is terrifying for me.
Yeah.
And now I'm way better at catching myself out of like, "Oh yeah, Here we go. Self-sabotage because you're feeling like you don't deserve it. You're not good enough. Who do you think you are? That's for other people. And I'm better now at catching that out. I can spot my signs. But I imagine sometimes when you kind of walking through this blindly for the first few times, you don't. And then you're like, crap, that default is still within me. I thought I'd nailed this and here I am having to blooming deal with it again. And that's where, for me, the yo-yo thing happened for years.
It rears its head, doesn't it? Do you know how I always deal with people like, well, always now I deal with people like this, is I learned from my Slimming World training as a consultant a lot about empathy. And a lot about disarming people with empathy. So actually, the response I give back is, oh, you know, you must feel really frustrated that Slimming World didn't work for you, my darling. And, you know, can I help you find something that works for you? And almost putting it back to them, because what they're doing is they're reflecting their pain onto you. Actually, do you know what, Christina? Whoever said that to you feels rubbish that Slimming World worked for you, but they didn't work Slimming World for themselves. So it's about sometimes what they're projecting to you. And I always think, start with empathy, and then we can get to the real discussion. There is also then another factor. Some people are just really quite rude and quite jealous. And you will get that, oh, don't lose any more. Oh, my mum lost 5 stone. And people would say, oh, your skin's struck, Claire. You're looking a bit haggard. How blinking dare you? Do you know what? I don't look haggard. My mum used to say, well, it's all right, balloons don't get wrinkles, but I'm not a balloon anymore, which I thought was quite a clever response. But I think it's about knowing how, when people attack you for your success, that if you can take it as their issue, don't let it get under your skin, you're going to walk away a lot better. But then also look, if it is someone close to you and the relationship is that you can say it, you know, you're going to have to be frank and say, do you know what, Sarah, Kate, Emily, David, whatever, you're making me feel sad, you're making me feel angry, you're making me feel fed up, and you need to know what you're saying is making me feel like that. Because I think what we do, we're very British, aren't we? We've got that stiff upper lip, we'll take too many things and then we'll explode. Whereas if you said, you know what, are you cross that maybe you didn't find your joy in Slimming World? Are you cross that I've done this? How does that make you feel? It might just totally turn the situation around. I know that's a really tough thing to do, but you have to be honest. I've had to be honest with people in my life and say, look, when you do X, it causes me to react in this way, which isn't a good way. But can we find a balance of how you talk to me and then how I respond? Because neither of us is enjoying this.
No, and if there's one thing that we don't need as slimmers is more guilt. Like, we're already feeling guilty of ourselves, of like, oh my God, I got fat in the first place. You don't need to be piling on other people's guilt because they can't do it too. Like,
But then also it's that remembering when someone comes to you like that, you know how it feels. I know how it feels to have joined Slimming World 21 times and not been successful. It wasn't the plan that didn't work, it was my head. It was my emotion. It was my inability to make a commitment. And how that made me feel, I'd watch girls on like TV and the magazines and feel sick at how good they looked and how awful I looked. And, you know, I'd go on holiday with groups of girls and I'd be the one in the swimming costume. They'd all be in the bikini and I'd feel so angry with them that they didn't have to battle it. But it takes a lot of courage to actually be able to vocalise that, whereas the people that are around our gorgeous listeners haven't got to that point yet. They're just hitting them with the horrible comments, aren't they? So I think if you can remember where the root comes from, it kind of makes you feel better about it. You know, like if a toddler, and I say this because I have a 3-year-old, she said to me yesterday, should I don't love you. You make me sick. And I was bereft. And then I thought, hang on, she's saying she don't love me and I make her sick because I won't let her have more chocolate. So you've almost got to like ignore these people like you do ignore a 3-year-old who's not got the chocolate they want. There you go. I told you you'd get something out of this podcast, didn't I?
Well, you know, the interesting part as well, when I went back in our back catalogue, right, to episode 62, where I got to go and meet Dr. Linda Papadopoulos.
Oh, you went to a posh restaurant.
In London, and we had ginger tea. Which one am I drinking right now?
Ginger tea.
Ginger tea.
I was in hospital dying, and you were drinking ginger tea in a posh restaurant.
I'm sorry about that.
Took one for the team, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Episode 62, Mind Your Language, Not Just Your Waistline. And in this was back in January 2020, Slimmerworld revealed this study, which was called Mind Your Language. And actually, one of the findings that they picked out there was that a third of people sometimes struggle with their weight or body image, say that their friends, family, or partner and spouse negatively affect their self-esteem on a daily basis. So a third of people who struggle with their weight... are having the people closest to them affect their self-esteem on a daily basis. And that's why I think, because then it also picked out how when people in group kind of talk about the fact they're going through this, it helps them feel less alone. Mm. And then it said, you know, being part of the group to kind of have that understanding, I guess, helped people feel more positive. 89% said losing weight had helped them feel more positive. 72% said similar group made them feel like they're not alone. I think that's like kind of key, isn't it? It's like just this lonely journey that I talk about in the middle, when you're kind of looking towards the finish line and there's no one. Like, I would struggle to do a 5 or a 10K race, like, with no one else running, with no spectators, with no medal at the end. So then for me, the race environment is almost like, I've got my group, I've got my family on the spectators on the sideline, I'm going to cross that finish line, I'm going to get me a shiny sticker and a certificate. I kind of imagine like all that lonely journey of just running out on my own fills me with dread, but to know that there are other people alongside me.
Support system is key.
That's a number one. So kind of, I think, lean on those people. And then I suppose also, like, you know, we've kind of been through this situation. So it's almost like learning of the vocabulary, like you were saying, about how to say, I need help. And when you do this, it causes me to do this. Can we do this in the future? Voicing that, I think, is... because sometimes you don't know what you want. That's the other thing that's really frustrating. Yeah. Like, you know it's annoying you, but you don't know how to say, I want this.
Like, this week, you wanted to eat all the Biscoff spread and not to put any weight on. You also wanted the stress in your life to go.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have that, could you? And I think what happens with food and with alcohol is it happens before we know it. And it is that process of saying, hold on, stop a second. I had it the other day with chocolate. Really wanted some chocolate, like, so bad. But came upstairs, did some work while I was thinking about the chocolate, and I forgot about it. But it was only because I was so busy I forgot about it. Whereas if I'd stayed in the kitchen, I would have eaten the chocolate. So it's knowing how you work, isn't it? It's knowing, actually, like, saying, like, for example, I know Saturdays are always a really stressful day for me, with group and all of that. So Phil and I plan in, actually, we're going to either cook something really good, or we're getting a very, very, very low food optimized takeaway, so it takes the pressure off. If I don't plan in like that, I crash, I burn, I order a big pizza, get the cookies and the ice cream too. So it's knowing how you react. Also knowing how you react if someone starts to sabotage you, does that cause you to then go stricter and food optimize in a really kind of almost negative way? Or does it take you to, like, bursting the banks? Because there'll be people listening who actually, when someone makes a comment on their weight, they don't go and eat the cakes and the crisps. They only go and eat the vegetables and the protein. So it's kind of listening to what happens to you and making a plan for it. So if Bob tells me I've lost too much weight and I'm boring, well, Bob, you know what? I'm going to have a really big Slimworld burger and chips. And I'm going to go for that run, and I'm going to show you that, A, I look fabulous, and B, I'm not boring. You know, so you've got...
I thought you were going to say, like, Bob off then or something.
Oh, no, that would be too much thought. But it's knowing, like you would, look, this is how I react when I'm hungover. This is how I react when I'm due on, if you're a lady. This is how I react if I'm tired. This is how I react if someone tries to sabotage me. And these are my action points to deal with it. So I'm going to try talking to them. I'm going to try making a plan for when they do it. And I'm also going to realize that this is something that I'm going to have to cultivate, because we have taken a stance in our relationships with each other. And you'll see, if you look closely at your family or your friendship groups, it won't just be food, it won't just be booze, it will be doing the chores, it will be how Christmas goes, it will be what happens when there's a death in the family. You'll see, you all take your point, and this will filter through all of it. So it's almost like a communication process within your family group or your friendship group or your marriage. There'll be a dynamic, and you have to change each part of that for it to kind of filter through.
It's like, what do they call it in business? It's like being a disruptor.
Yeah, oh, you know, right, okay.
When you're disrupting like the kind of
the
natural flow of things. Yeah, because you're kind of like, wait a sec. Like, there are X number of chess pieces. There is one queen, one king. And now you're saying that you want there to be three queens? Like, that can't happen.
Yeah.
Like, and people are going to, like, you're going to meet resistance. But yeah, you know.
Also, another thing to mention, you mentioned it at the beginning, like, people are fearful. Like, I see this dynamic with husbands and wives or partners. You know, if there's been a lady perhaps who's lost a lot of weight, found her confidence, dressed differently, does her hair, goes out. I've seen it where partners get very scared. Is she still going to want to be with me? Is she still going to be in love with me? So actually, their instinctive thing at a subconscious level is, if I can keep her this way, she won't leave me. So almost realizing what's going on for the other person and knowing that that may be an absolute place, not of their own weight, but of their fear of losing you, can almost help disarm the situation a little bit, because I think we have to remember communication is two ways. The way we take it and the way it's intended maybe get disrupted.
Well, I think we're going to continue hearing some more of these types of questions, aren't we? Next week is going to be listeners' questions.
Yeah.
And already looking in the inbox, some really, really interesting ones, mostly around, I think, this term of like balance and emotional expectations. So this is a topic that I think comes up often, and maybe one to kind of take to your group this week and talk about with some of your fellow group members about how do you manage the dynamic at home, with others, with your family, with your support network. Have you had any kind of negative feedback? How did you handle that? Or ask your group, how would you handle it? Because I think what's really interesting is there are different people in my group who are at different ages who have done the plan different amounts of time, and I present these kind of situations and I hear from a wealth of people who have been there, done that, and had different approaches. Mm. And I think that's what really kind of pulls it together for me, to kind of think like, actually, a lot of the situations we face as swimmers are not unique. Other people often face them, and you're not alone. And
you,
I think that is what's reassuring.
And know that your group's your tribe. And I think that's what I love being a consultant, is seeing when, you know, Linda will say one thing and then, you know, 24 others on Zoom are jumping into, oh my God, I felt this, or I felt this. So seeking out your tribe is really key.
Yeah. Yep, I would definitely say that. I mean, even when I ditched the alcohol, that's very difficult.
Massive.
To do on your own, actually.
Yeah.
Culturally, it's very challenging too. You know, you're going against a lot of, you are a disruptor by choosing not to do culturally what is accepted as the norm. It's a fine example. So for me, finding my tribe of people who were like, actually, I'm going through the same thing.
Yeah.
Let's be curious. Let's see what else we can do.
Yeah.
It's fun. You know, you end up forming better bonds. You end up feeling a lot more confident about who you are. You feel more proud of your own achievements too. And it's just another hump that you just got to overcome. Right now, there could be people ready to knock you off your perch. But in 5 years' time, when you look back, will you remember all these little squabbles that you have over the Biscoff spread? No, you probably won't. You'll remember the things that you've gone on to achieve. That's
unless
you're
married
hope.
To me, where I remember every little squabble over every bit of Natonka that has come through the door.
Thank God we're not. Right, have a great week. Whatever you get up to, we'll be back next week with tons of your questions. And remember, enjoy your sins, enjoy your food. Ta-ra a bit.
Bye.